Radio. Here we go. One more time, WTC is back on the air. We Talk Comics, episode number 18, Mad Scientist Reunion. If that doesn't make sense to you yet, it will by the end of the show, I'm sure. Everybody, I'm going to let my co-hosts introduce themselves by telling us their name and who they are and who it would be their ultimate interview in the comic book world. Brett, please go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm Brett.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even though it's probably a little cliche, my ultimate interview in the comic book world would have to be Stan the Man Lee. He's just been around it all, done it all, and he's written a lot of crap, but he wrote a lot of the major characters that we talk about today. So, you know, I would love to talk to that guy.
What is it, Chris?
No, I just wanted to introduce myself because mine sort of turns into Brett's.
Go ahead, then.
You want to interview me?
No. I want to interview Larry Lieber, Stan's brother.
Yeah,
all the
Atlas
information
comic.
Of Stan Lee without the unqualified, well, let's call it bullshit. Stan hasn't told the truth for about 25 years. I want the truth from Larry Lieber, somebody who's been there since the beginning. He scripted the first appearances of Thor and Iron Man, and we get the truth without the hype that Stan would give us.
All right.
And we can get the true story of Atlas Comics.
All right, and we get Keith telling us who his ultimate interview would be.
Well, I'm going to go modern age. I'm going to say Dan Jurgens. My ultimate writer and artist of the Death of Superman.
And Booster Gold. Tell the truth.
And Booster Gold. I just got a new Booster Gold t-shirt that I'm wearing for the podcast.
It's your Booster
and,
Gold
you
order
can,
that means
you can
it's why you want to.
Our listeners will be able to hear that I'm wearing a Booster Gold t-shirt.
Oh, this is TV, isn't it?
Local comic shop. They can feel it.
Guys, remember that episode of WKRP where the crazy guy came in and he has all these charts and he says, can you see this? And they go, it's radio. And he goes, oh, so he just brings it closer to the microphone. I love that. It's awesome. Well, anyways, I'm Mo. My ultimate interview would be, I'm going to a little bit more new school too. Scott McCloud, Zot, is the book that I guess he would be. His own creator-owned book, but also understanding and reinventing comics. For his ability to break down and understand the comic book medium, explain it to me, and there's just so much on his mind I would love to pick at. So that would be my ultimate interview. Though, I gotta say, the Neil Adams, Mike Mignola, these ones that we did early on in the first couple episodes, I really enjoyed those as well. Everybody, if you are listening to us the first time, we've had some good interviews in the past, so go into the archives. All right, everybody, we're going to open up with our regular feature as Keith, known as at Cub Reporter K on Twitter, is going to give us the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Well, we got some stuff happening as DC and Marvel get ramped back up for the new year. They're announcing some of the projects coming up. We've got Walt Simonson will be jumping onto Avengers to draw it for 6 issues, being written by Brian Bendis, who's working now toward the ending of his run on Avengers. Those will be the issues that tie in with the AVX crossover. So it's interesting to have. It's been a while since Simonson's been a Marvel artist. I honestly don't even know what he's been doing. So should have hit the Wikipedia before the show. If anyone wants to jump in with what
I'll be looking it up right now. Keep on with the freaking news.
We have there's an episode of Harry's Law this week that will be really interesting to the comic book geeks. Erica Durance, who played Lois Lane on Smallville, is doing an episode of Harry's Law in which she plays a woman who thinks she's Wonder Woman. The extra geek bit is that the costume they decided to use for Erica Durance is the costume from the Wonder Woman pilot that wasn't picked up. So it's quite, this actually, they would get a couple of bucks back out of that costume that they created for the pilot of Wonder Woman. We've got...
I'm just going to jump in. Well, he's been working on World of Warcraft, the comic book series for that, most recently.
Would he explain why I missed it?
Yeah.
The Disney XD channel will be launching a Marvel Universe block of programming. This will tie in with some of their existing shows, such as the Avengers cartoon. There'll also be new material being created for it. And no announcements on what those shows will be, but just that it will be a marketed block of programming. DC's been working on the same kind of thing with Cartoon Network, I think it is. So Marvel getting on board with that. Rumor today that Justice League number 5 may be the first book to ship late from the New 52. The dealers today that got their confirmation and invoices for next week have noticed that Justice League is not on it. We'll see what if that really means that it becomes the first late book. I think anyone who had Justice League in the office pool on what would fall late first.
I did. You guys each owe me 100, right?
I don't think you got that kind of odds on Justice League being the first one that goes late.
Because Geoff Johns, you know, he writes so much into them that, that it just took a while.
Well, and Jim Lee's never been late with a book before, so this is a first.
My money's always been on Liefeld.
Actually, me too. Then again, pretty much he could crap out what he's doing there in any time. I mean, who couldn't?
I'm just hoping this means that that Jim Lee's taking the time to finish up All-Star Batman. Now, I want to correct a little...
That's a big Frank Miller fan, week. Of course you are. Go ahead.
A little boo-boo I made last week during the news. The Venom crossover... I misread the article. It is being called Circle of Four. Next big thing is a marketing campaign that Marvel's doing right now where they're doing a series of live events online of new marketing initiatives. So one of the ones announced this week is that the Captain America and Bucky title will be renamed in April as Captain America and Hawkeye. To cover over the time that the movie comes out. That only runs 4 issues, and then it's going to be called Captain America and Iron Man. And this pattern is expected to continue for some time, that it'll be each arc will have a new title, continuing the same numbering as the original Captain America title.
Why can't we just call it Marvel Team-Up?
Because eventually they're going to change the name of Avenging Spider-Man to Marvel Team-Up. And maybe you can pick up Marvel 2-in-1's numbering. It ended at 100. I think 101 is a good start. And the biggest announcement this week, and it was a twofold announcement that the bigger deal for me actually got buried under the headline. Batman and Detective Comics, starting with their number 8, will go to a extra pages book at $3.99, the way Action and All-Star Western are. The extra material in both books will be written by the main writer, so Scott Snyder on Batman and Tony Daniels on Detective. It will be extra story pages, backup stories, as opposed to extra content in the original, in the primary book. Detective will be backups of Two-Face. And the bigger deal for me is that the backup in Batman is the Court of Owls, which has been the storyline that Snyder's been working on since the book relaunched, this secret society that's working inside Gotham that Bruce Wayne was told didn't exist. The number 8 issue backup story will be called Night of the Owls, and it is the kickoff to the Night of the Owls crossover event in May, which is the first event of the New 52.
Is this event just in the Batman books or throughout all of the DC universe?
All of the Batman books and All-Star Western. All-Star Western will feature a storyline that takes place in the 1800s, telling about the Court of Owls starting to come to power. And the backup stories in Batman will be in number 8, it'll be kicking off that. Scott Snyder's not calling it a crossover. It is a thematic event. My term, he's being clear that it's not something that you follow part 1, part 2. It's that what happens in the backup of number 8 of Batman will set up something happening in Gotham that then has repercussions in the other books. So it's not a read part 1, it's that you can continue reading one book and it will make sense on its own. You don't have to get off with the whole lot. but closer to some of the stuff that was done in Spider Island, that you could kind of piecemeal parts of it as opposed to reading every single story. And Scott actually, because he's the classiest man in comics, tweeted me back answers to questions. Oh, the classiest man besides Mo.
Thank you.
that number 8 is the kickoff of this, and then numbers 9 through 11 will be the secret history of the Court of Owls and their connection to the Waynes and to the Pennyworths, Alfred's family.
You know what? I hate to say they're going to bring me back, but I'm interested in that. If it wasn't for the fact that it's named Court of Owls, I mean, Jesus. It's horrible. Let's move on. Anybody got any comments on any of the news there, then?
The Batman backup stories, I love the idea. The owl thing, definitely want. I want to read that. So it's only good news as far as I'm concerned.
You know what? I'm looking forward to that. The animated block from Marvel. I think that's really, really interesting, and the idea that DC is doing the same type of thing. But then I'm sure DC or Marvel will do something to piss me off too. It's generally a one step forward, two steps backwards with that company lately for me. So, okay, let's move on here to our next topic. And our opening topic this week is we're going to talk about a book that just came out in trade paperback form because we had a chance to interview the artist. We've mentioned it a few times. But first off, we're going to talk about the book. And so that's The Intrepids. And which one of you three fine gentlemen, which one of you three would like to say and kind of explain the concept behind The Intrepids?
All right. The Intrepids is a story about a group of enhanced youngsters that are basically on a mission to eliminate the mad scientists of the world, seeing them as kind of the greatest evil around and trying to just kind of take their inventions off the market so they can't do any harm. And so it's basically their story about how they came into being.
A good scientist who wants to be a bad scientist.
Yes,
that's key. So, yeah, I know. Okay, Brett, why don't you give your review of the book? Like I say, trade paperback form come out, and you read it today. What did you think of The Intrepids?
Oh, you know, I actually really liked the book. I thought that there was early on, I thought that there was a few bits that kind of threw me off. The writing kind of confused me a little bit, but once I was really into the story, then I felt that most of those got smoothed out, and I was really able to see where it was heading. But I thought that they did a nice job of keeping me interesting despite that. And I do have to say that Scott Kowalczyk's art, it reminded me, it actually wound up reminding me a lot of a slightly less stylized Mike Mignola. But I thought it was really good. I thought it worked nicely for the book. Like, I'm not saying that he's my perfect artist by any stretch of the imagination, but it worked well for the book. It reminded me of a couple of other books, but this one, I would definitely consider reading this again for sure.
So it goes in the cat's meow then? Catwoman's meow?
Yeah, I think I would safely put it as a cat's meow.
Ah, excellent. And Keith, your thoughts on it?
I really enjoyed this book. It had... I'm not a great nostalgia guy for the Silver Age, but I like that Silver Age feel in this book. It reminded me of old Doom Patrol. And I sent a note to Scott after I read the book to that effect, and he said it wasn't an intentional, but he also loved the Doom Patrol, so he got exactly what I meant. I think it was subconscious in there for him. Just that sense of that these people, they're not related, but they share this, they share a problem, they share life challenges, and they become a family because of that. And very much that group of misfits feel from the old days.
Monkeys and bears. It had cats meow for me right off the bat.
So that's three cats.
That's all I really need. But beyond that, yes, nice Silver Age story. Kept me interesting throughout. Unfortunately, it reminded me a lot of Umbrella Academy.
That's the one I was going for sure, yeah.
Yeah. But actually, in some ways, it was better. It was more readable than Umbrella Academy. I didn't have to go back and reread it. like I did the Umbrella Academy. It was more straightforward story. Definitely did enjoy it. It definitely goes in the file, or would go in the file if it was unlimited.
Yeah, excellent. And I also give it a Catwoman Meow, and we're not just doing this because of Scott. It's just a really, really good book. You'll look at the reviews elsewhere and where it's listed in some of the best of for miniseries for 2011, and it's way, way up there. This was, for me, I think the art style reminded me of an adult cartoon almost in some way, and I don't mean an adult X-rated. I mean just a cartoon that's on late at night on Cartoon Network that is that stylized but really, really accessible style to it that you sometimes see. And same with the dialogue. And, yeah, I agree with Brett that it didn't start off with its storyline quite perfect. I think it took a little while to kind of get its rhythm going. And I think that's, we have to keep in mind they're both young creators, and I think that's a big reason why. But once it did get its rhythm, I thought it was really terrific. Maybe it didn't need to be a six-issue miniseries. Maybe that was the issue, that the pacing wasn't quite right there. But once it got going, I thought it was a terrific miniseries. And plus, it also contained a line in it where one of the characters says, "I love my power glove. It's so bad." Now, if you get that reference, why that's awesome, I don't have to explain it to you. And if you don't, I'm not going to bother either. But that was the best line I've ever read. Ever. That just ruled. So anyways, let's drop to Scott's interview. Scott, I hope the audio quality on this is fine. Scott's a quiet gentleman, cerebral, and was a pleasure to chat with him. So hopefully it's going to come across well, maybe turn it up, and then we're going to maybe we won't have a Chris talk first, because if we did, we'd blow your ears out. So we'll come back, and we'll have Keith talk a little bit about the interview from his perspective, because he sat there and listened to it.
All right. Well, what we've been talking to a lot of artists about is, as comics move into being print and digital, is that affecting the way that you create? How are you approaching that?
Well, okay. So I've had no experience with the digital universe with comics. I don't read them digitally. I just prefer them on paper. I know it's, you know, wasteful of trees, etc., but I genuinely find the experience more gratifying on paper. But that said, somebody showed me the comics. I think what's the app? Comixology?
Comixology.
Yeah. Somebody showed me the app, and it was really interesting how it went kind of from panel to panel. And it was neat. I think it hasn't affected the way that I work. I still like comic books looking like they're from the 1950s and 60s. That's just the way that I make comics, and that's the way I want them to look. But so no, it hasn't affected. I think that it's good. I think that it, you know, opening up the market to a younger generation that's a more tech savvy than, you know, any of us who are over the age of like 25. Ace.
When you're let's say you haven't really experienced it yourself.
Yeah.
Is this something you're thinking to yourself, I want to try that, I want to give that a shot, I want to see if that's different and challenge myself in a different way?
No.
No?
I'd like to say yes, but I find the work challenging enough as it is and gratifying enough as it is that I don't feel like I need to change it to fit a mold that I don't necessarily understand. Like I think the mold of digital comics needs to fit the medium more than the medium fitting the mold, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So comics, I think, need to stay comics.
Yeah.
And whatever application they fit into after the fact, I think needs to come after the fact. Like, I think it's like with a 3D movie. Like, if you're setting out to make a 3D movie from the outset, make it 3D. Don't make it 3D after the fact.
Well, what if you get to like SCTV and you get that dude? You know, what about, not obvious at all.
I know. What was he called? It was Dr.
Was it the House of
Dr. Tung?
Dr. Tung.
The 3D House of Pancakes.
Yes, that was it. House of Pancakes.
And it was John Candy, right?
Yes, that's right. So brilliant. It was brilliant.
Part of Monster Chiller Horror Theater.
I love that you know that. That's so good. Yeah. Oh,
excellent.
Dr. Tung.
And I'm going to be.
This will only play well in Canadian podcast listeners.
This will. That's all right. I'm going to be watching some of this on YouTube tonight because I know it's on there.
Yeah.
Well, when you're looking at it from a change in the marketplace, you kind of, you said it's already challenging enough.
Yeah.
So what are the challenges then? What do you find most challenging when you're going to start a new book?
That's a good question. A lot of it is just the startup and a new book. Like, I'm working at Oni right now on a series with them, and it's just, you know, everything, like, coming out of a series that I did with Image, the Intrepids, into something new. It's just you kind of have to change your mindset because the concept is so radically different. So that's a bit of a challenge, just kind of being open enough to make things look different because the material is completely different, but still keeping, you know, sort of that underlying style that I hope eventually defines my work. So that's, you know, probably just that shift from series to series is the biggest change.
I think your style, it's not a realistic style, but it is a real world style, if you know what I mean, and that it feels natural and relatable and instantly. So how did you kind of come to that or work on that? When you first started drawing, did you say, I know what kind of artist I want to be, or is it something that just developed over time?
Well, it evolves over time. I mean, and I appreciate that. That's very kind to say because, like, you know, there are guys like Darwin Cook who, you know, has a very animated approach to the way that he draws, but there's still things very recognizable. Like, he draws environments, I think, better than, you know, 90% of artists because, like, he's just drawing them, from what I can tell, straight out of his head, and they look like what they're meant to look like. Like, he'll draw a train yard in Hunter. It looks like a train yard, but it's not traced or anything. I'm not against artist tracing, but I do think that there's a stiffness in the traced image, whereas, like, if you look back at the 60s and the Alex Toths and the Steve Ditko's and Kirby, you know, those guys were just kind of making it up, you know. Like, I try to use reference anytime I can, but it's reference to help influence what I'm trying to draw.
Well, that was the thing, that all the comics took place in New York because all the creators lived there and they could look out their window for their reference material.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you'd see, you know, you'd get like, I think it was Kirby's, was it Commandy?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was still New York-based, but it was a decrepit New York. But, you know, making something decrepit is much easier than making it, you know, futuristic or whatever. But, but no, like, the real-world relatability, like, I use a lot of reference photos just because, you know, there are things that I don't feel like I can confidently make up. You know, certain wrinkles in clothes, I know I can use a photo much better than just kind of, oh, yeah, this is what it's supposed to look like. I'm still pretty green at this. Like, I've only been doing it since March professionally. So I mean, yeah, with my new series, like, there's a lot, you know, there's more locations that are recognizable as a place, whereas my book The Intrepid's, like, a lot of it was futuristic science fiction, whatever. You can make that up a little bit easier.
How can you get your and like I said, I didn't want to take too much of your time, but this is fascinating. So when you get a script from a writer, how quickly are you able to visualize what they want? Do you kind of ruminate at it, go through it a few times, or is it immediately you can see it in your head and start to work on it?
It really depends on the quality of the script. I have received scripts from writers that are just so profoundly bad that I'm not going to hear any names. But they're they're just so underprepared and under-researched that as an artist, like, you can't. You should be able to get a visual from this script right away, which is sometimes, I don't know how guys in the 60s at, like, Marvel Comics, when they were doing that, when, you know, Stan Lee would say, I gave him a paragraph of information, how they visualized anything. Like, that to me is amazing. But the good scripts that I've received, like, you know, will give times and locations, and, you know, you're set in a certain era, you know, they'll say, you know, we'd like this automobile to look like this, you know, we're at this type of restaurant, so it immediately gives you sort of an, oh, okay, you know, like, if you were to say as a writer, like, you know, it's set in a McDonald's, well, you at least know what that looks like, right? I'm vegan, I would never go into a McDonald's, but I remember what they look like. So, yeah, the good scripts already have a predetermined idea of what they want to look like. Writers who really know their craft know how to convey a visual to an artist.
Do you still feel that you get a level of creativity, though, if you have that much detail given to you on what the writer wants?
Now, that's a good point, because I have received scripts that are too detailed, where it's like, you know, figure A appears in the foreground, figure B, like, 3 feet behind figure A. You know, there's a light post, you know, 20 feet away from them. And it's just like, what am I supposed to do with that? That's so detailed that it's not fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, the good script set a tone, I guess, more than an actual like structure. So you get a tone from a script really, really early on. Like the script I'm working on now with Oni, it feels very kind of, you know how Pulp Fiction was a 1990s movie, but it felt kind of 70s.
Yeah.
That's the vibe that I got from this script. So visually, that's what I'm trying to give it, like setting it in a contemporary period, but making it feel a little bit older.
That grindhouse feel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Grindhouse, completely contemporary, but it feels like it's a 70s pick.
Yeah.
And I think comic books are like that a lot. Like, I think comic books have that versatility where you can make something very contemporary with, you know, cell phones, whatever, but it can feel like a 1960s, like, visual.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. It's a versatile medium. It's, it could be used a lot more.
Well, you can do whatever you want without a budget.
Yeah.
Is the thing. So that's, you know.
Yeah.
And if you have the talent and the time to be able to pull it off, then you can make it what you want it to be.
And desire, if you have that desire.
Yeah, exactly. Do you feel, what about a pressure on a deadline then? When are you, sometimes it does happen, you go, I'm not happy with this, but I don't have a choice anymore. What is that? I imagine that kind of feels like...
It's the worst feeling.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just have to walk away. Like, I had one panel on my new project that was just killing me. It was affecting the entire layout of the page, and I just could not pull the trigger on this one panel. I must have redrawn the page 3 times. It was like I got like halfway through the ink.
The entire page or just the panel?
The panel, but it affected the layout of the page. So the layout had to change. So it was one of those, like, I was talking to my editor and I was saying, I'm sorry, this one is just killing me, but it needs to be right because it's kind of a crux in the story. I don't know if crux is the right word, but anyway. And so I finally, you know, it put me a few days behind. Normally you don't want to do that, but in this case I kind of felt like I have to. But yeah, deadlines do make a big difference. That's why you do get a lot more artist tracing. You know, I use way more reference than I'm sure Ditko and Kirby ever did. But they were also much better artists than I am. So yeah, deadline does play into it huge, but I guess, you know, some guys' styles are, you know, much more tapered down to kind of meet deadlines a little bit faster. And, you know, some people, you know, do just, you know, completely, not even trace, you know, they'll drop in pictures in the background, which is okay. I think it works sometimes.
Well, what about when you see a Mark Bagley and you know he can draw 75 books a month?
Yeah.
does that blow your mind?
And
he's quite good, too. I mean,
yeah, Mark Bagley's pace, more than anything, is just, I think, unreal. Like, I think John Romita Jr. is the same. Like, yeah. I think he's very fast.
Yeah.
And they blow me away just based on, like, their ability to turn them out. Riley Rossmo, same thing. Like, he's very fast.
Yeah.
And his style's very accommodating to that. So, it blows my mind. I'm not as fast as those guys yet. Again, I'm pretty new, but...
That's okay. I mean, you know, it's... I can't remember the name of the book, but there's a novel that talks about how many hours you have to put in before you master something. And, you know, I mean, it's
I read an interview with... I want to say it was Marcos Martin, whatever. Artist on Daredevil, Amazing Spider-Man. He did Batgirl Year One. And he said it was something like 500 pages before you kind of come into your own.
Or
1,000 pages. It was like, it was a huge amount. Yeah. So
yeah,
I'm only at like 150 pages, so I've got a ways to go.
You look exhausted with the thought of putting in 1,000 right now.
It's been a long day, but oh, it's the best job ever.
Yeah, you know what? It's the best job ever, actually, is for us to read it. So one thing I want to ask you, because you mentioned Jack Kirby a couple times now. Now, as a person who's not an artist, as a person who couldn't draw my own face, you know, with a circle, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but what I'm saying is, yeah, exactly. I'm not in no artistic ability in that way. So when I look at him, I'm wondering if I'm seeing the same thing that an artist like you is looking at. What do you see from Kirby? I mean, I'm blown away by the detail and the imagination. That's the things that just the little details, the small things that nobody else puts in. And then just the imagination to create those things in the first place. That's what blows me away about Kirby.
Well, the thing is, before Kirby hit, like, you know, kind of hit the scene with, like, Fantastic... I think Fantastic Four was his first book of Marvel. Like, if you look at anything in
the Marvel of monster books before,
I yeah, know. And he did a lot of Westerns.
Yeah.
There was just, like, there's nothing that you can relate his work to. Like, there's nothing in comic books that's kind of a natural progression of, like, okay, this is what Kirby was looking at. Kirby kind of just hit, and it was just all of a sudden, you know, where the hell did any of that come from? Because it's fascinating to look at, like, What was I reading of his recently? It might have been The Avengers, and there was a scene, he drew a gun, and it doesn't look the way a gun looks, because none of his stuff was ever photorealistic, but it was always an interpretation of what was real, and it was such a beautiful and elegant interpretation that for me, it's like, I just don't know how to make that leap from, you know, object to, this is my beautiful Jack Kirby interpretation of that object. He drew a gun more interesting, in a more interesting and creative way than I've ever seen anybody else draw, like, a firearm.
And that's just the gun.
And that's just the gun.
And then there's all the other stuff in the panel.
And that's, he was just so innovative.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people don't give those guys the credit enough. Like, Steve Ditko, mm-hmm. also so innovative, but you know, people just don't really think back to that. There's this sort of disassociation with, you know, where comic books started. You know, I think it was in the mid to late 80s, people started, you know, criticizing Kirby's work, like, oh, his proportions are wrong. His proportions are right on, it's just he makes them dynamic.
Yeah.
This is like, yeah. It's called foreshadowing. Yeah. Like, you can criticize it, but like without a Jack Kirby, like, comic books as a form now doesn't exist. Like, he created the language that, you know, has just become happenstance for us.
So who else is it besides Kirby and Ditko that you look at and go, nobody else did that before? They were the first to do that, and that's influencing, and that inspires me.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, Milton Caniff. I never know how to pronounce his name. It was fantastic. Alex Toth, I think, broke the mold. A lot of those old guys basically just pick up an issue of Creepy Number One. And those are the guys that, we, you know, I think influenced what comic books should be. I think we've moved away from that. Like, I think there's been a big influence of, you know, what was popular in the 90s and sort of the late 90s coming into now. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just for me, as what drew me to comic books as a kid, that's not it. Like, my favorite... my favorite comic book when I was a kid was a Charlton comic called The Many Ghosts of Dr. Graves. Number 12. Might be number 8. It's a Steve Ditko. Dr. Graves was basically, it was basically like a creepy where Dr. Graves would introduce a series of vignettes. But it was just, it was interesting. And I mean, Ditko did, you know, really fascinating stuff with that sort of Dr. Strange world. And he did it with Dr. Graves. And it was just, it was, to me as a kid, it felt like a comic book. Whereas as beautiful as I think Neil Adams' work is, like as an example, Neil Adams is much more realistic. You know, very highly detailed, very highly rendered, kind of like your Brian Hitches and everything, who are amazing artists, far better than I will ever be. But for me, as a comic book reader and comic book fan and comic book creator, I guess, I feel like books, I like books that look more like what Ditko and Kirby and Toth were doing, and I think guys like Paul Grist and Darwin Cook do that now. And my hat's off to them, because
Will Eisner
was amazing. And you know, there aren't that many creators now who make books that look like that. And the ones that do, for me, really stand out.
This might be a question I'm not sure if it's going to fit here, so there might be some editing coming, but hopefully it will fit. So you're an artist, and you talk about all these. Like, I see you put a lot of thought into what you're doing. So, how have you read Understanding Comics?
Yeah. Oh, and Scott McCloud.
How many times have you read it? Is it a huge influence? Do you look at that and go, that explains to me what I'm supposed to doing here? Is it a reference point in those ways? I think that book, again, I can't draw. I couldn't draw. Like I said, I couldn't draw a stick.
Yeah.
I couldn't draw a stick if I had a stick in front of me.
Yeah.
But I look at that book and the psychology of it, and I understand it, the way he presented it, and I just think it's fascinating. I wonder if it helps an artist as well.
I teach a course in Calgary at ACAD. It's a comic book, you know, storytelling class, and I use that book as just my basis for the students, you know, to read and kind of understand how to tell a story sequentially, because it's incredible. Like, there's things that he would point out that I just kind of didn't even think. Like, you know, I always saw them in books, but until you see it broken down into a language, like into the language of comic books, it was just always sort of a vague notion that we all had. But he, you know, he stamped it and said, you know, this is what this means. Like, you know, this is what a non sequitur is. I always knew what a non sequitur looked like, but there was no label for it.
Yeah.
So it was fantastic for me. It's like, you know, it was like reading, a textbook for, an English course or something. It was
But an enjoyable textbook.
A very enjoyable textbook. No, it's yeah. it's fantastic.
And reinventing comics as well is. Have you read that one?
I haven't.
You haven't? It, you know, came out quite a while ago. I mean, I think it was probably a dozen years ago. But he's actually talking about things in there that he foresaw some of the changes that were coming in digital comics and that type of thing. He's already on the cutting edge of those things. I'm waiting for a third volume. But, he's just, you know, his ability to break down and analyze things is interesting. So, as is yours. So I don't know if, Keith, anything else you want to contribute here? It's been so much.
I have one last question. The Yoni comic, is it a color or is it black and white?
Right now it's color. I'm going to be coloring it as well, which is so much extra work. But it's one of those I'm not sure where to take it color-wise just yet. Like, I'm still about 100 pages away from finishing the drawing process, so it's going to be kind of one of those, what are the colors going to look like? Are they going to be minimal, like what Darwin Cook is doing on Hunter? Or is it going to be more conventional, like, you know, your standard, you know, superhero book? It's going to be color, I just don't know to what degree.
I do have do you have a follow-up there? You've mentioned before that sometimes you've gotten a script and it's just not very good.
Yeah.
Do you how do you approach that from a work ethic point of view? Do you think I'm going to do the best with this regardless, or is it difficult to put your heart and soul into something when you see that that's not of high quality?
I've been pretty fortunate in that I've been given a lot of scripts, and, you know, Image was really supportive, and Oni has been really supportive, that I've kind of had a bit of a choice. So there have been scripts that I have received that, you know, people want to work on. You know, they've seen what I do, they like it, and they want to work with me. But just because I get it doesn't mean I have to work on it. And I think that that's probably a mistake that some younger artists have been doing this for 6 months. But you don't always have to jump at the first thing that comes your way. Like, if, you know, as an artist, you're professional enough and it looks good enough, just bide your time until you're passionate about something. Like my book with Oni, I'm passionate about. Like, I love the script. Like, it was a script that I read, and I hit a point halfway through where I was laughing too much that I had to stop and literally walk away, and then come back. Cause, like, I couldn't laugh that much more of reading a script.
What's the genre again of this book?
I don't know. I describe it as an Elmer Leonard novel meets Kill Bill meets Animal House. It's about a football player who, the big game of the year, he knocks out the opposing team's mascot, is subsequently suspended from the league, and then the story picks up 15 years later, 10 or 15 years later, and all these celebrity athletes are getting attacked by sports teams' mascots, and our main protagonist, the man who was kicked out of the league, he also is attacked, and the story just kind of unfolds from there as to why.
What, sorry, we're going on forever, but like, what mainstream characters would you like to crack at? Somebody's been in the business for just a short period of time.
Okay, Ted Kurtz, Blue Beetle. I can't believe he died, and I remember I read that issue, and like, as soon as I got to the scene where Max shoots him in the head, I launched that comic across the room. I've never been so upset reading a comic book as I was with that one. Ted Kord's movie, I would love to do like a year one with him, where it's just kind of out of context now. Doctor Strange, Batman, the Terrible Trio. I did a commission for a fellow, and it just, I love the way it turned out. It was something about drawing animals' heads on, like, business suits. I'd love a crack at, you remember Matt Wagner's Batman and the Monster Man?
Yes,
Batman.
Yeah.
I'd love to do that, but like Batman and the Terrible Trio.
Yeah.
Just as a miniseries, that'd be fantastic. What else?
I know there's at least one of our listeners who wants your Blue Beetle comic.
Oh, really?
We've got one. Yeah, I know one of our regular listeners is a ridiculously huge Blue Beetle fan. Ted Kord.
All-time favorite character is Booster Gold.
Booster's fantastic.
Yeah, my all-time favorite character is Captain Marvel, Shazam. Mm. And I think your style would really, really suit that, actually. Yeah, I think that would be really a great fit. So.
Well, I think I probably could come up with another 50 questions, but it's getting quite late, so we really want to thank you very much,
no,
Scott.
No, thank you guys. I really appreciate you waiting around.
And thanks again to Scott for sitting down with us at the Red and White Club Calgary show. And it was great talking to him. I always love when I'm talking to a creator and I see a stack of comics that they picked up at the show. And Scott had a big stack of 1960s work, DC's, Nick Fury, by Steranko, that kind of work. And, you know, you see these comic creators that they find their spot, and then they start saying things like, well, I don't really have the time to read stuff anymore. Scott's a lover of the medium as well as an artist. And Mo and I were lucky enough to pick up a couple of pages of art from the Intrepids. And this was a funny one, as Chris said, some of the things in the book that just automatically caught him. Well, we were flipping through the pages of original art, and I saw one, not having read the book at the time that we talked to Scott. There was one page from number 6, and I won't give away which one or what happens on the page, but it just has a giant robot on it. And it's a three-quarter splash of a giant robot. And I said, I don't even care what the book's about. The three-quarter page splash of a giant robot, what do you want for it?
Yeah, that's exactly pretty much my attitude was, holy crap, that's definitely a mad scientist creating something. Gimme. Pretty much. But as often the case, you know, you're enjoying the conversation. We really enjoyed it. And we're talking to him afterwards. And some of your best stuff happens afterwards. You get off the air and everything's just, you just keep on talking to him. We had some of the best stuff. Do you remember the highlight moment when we got off the air, though, Keith? No? All right. I'm going to give it to you here. So I'm sitting there and I say to Scott, well, maybe we can talk again in the future because I really, really enjoyed this. I feel like we didn't even get close to everything that we wanted to talk to. And he said, well, yeah, I mean, hopefully I'll see you guys again at the Calgary Entertainment Comic and Entertainment Expo. I was supposed to attend this past year, but unfortunately, my wife went into labor the day before the show. And I looked at him and went, that selfish bitch. And he started to laugh, and then he got this real serious look on his face. And he goes, hey, that's my wife. I thought he was going to beat the crap out of me. And he started chuckling again. But remember that now, Keith?
I do, and I'm pretty sure you could take Scott, though.
Perhaps. I don't know. I don't think I could take anybody. So
I think you could just sit on him.
The comics that he picked up were boarded, though, so, I mean, they would have a bit of heft to them.
So everybody keep an eye, look out, go and pick up a copy of the Intrepid Straight Paperback. You will enjoy it. You will read it more than once, and be on the lookout for what is it? A Ready, Set, Fight? Is that the next? What was that the name?
Ready, Set, Fight is the name.
Yeah, from Oni Press is the next project that he's going to be doing on, and you know, Oni also quality publisher. So let's move on to our next category for the day here, and what we're going to talk about is everybody's going to talk about what projects out there we'd like to see turn into an animated feature. And this came about because Chris suggested this topic to us, that what we'd like to see DC do next. And we thought we'd open it up a little bit from DC, though they're far and away ahead of everybody else on the quality of the animation at this point. And that's one thing I can say about Marvel, as I hope that now that they're having that block, hopefully they're going to be able to increase their quality. But they've never been as good as DC, and DC's both in its television shows and its direct-to-DVD movies have been simply fantastic, or direct-to-Blu-ray, because it is 2012. But let's go with Chris. Everybody has a couple. Let's open up with Chris because it was his topic. What would you like to see turn into an animated feature, Chris?
Alrighty, I'm sticking with DC here because whatever's happening at Marvel, Loeb is sure to screw it up. He's in charge of the Marvel animated and television projects, and I don't have a lot of faith. So I'm not even hoping for anything good out of this new block. But I'm going with Batman No Man's Land. It's large enough that it could make a good animated feature. It definitely is PG-13 content. Involves all the Bat characters, not just Batman. And it really takes place in a environment that is not completely natural to Batman. I think we could get some really nice visuals out of it.
We'll go to Keith. Go to Keith next.
Well, I'm going to blindside you guys. I'm going to say Booster Gold. But a full-on origin story of Booster Gold, going back to his launch, which ties him into the Legion of Superheroes. It ties him into Superman. He's got that Legion flight ring. And use him as a way to, as you know, as Jeff Johns and Jurgens did in the newer Booster Gold run, a way to tie in various points in the DC universe. into one, with one character being your viewpoint.
Keith, or Chris, Chris has something he wants to say here.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering if you'd prefer to see completely it completely reimagined for a DC animated movie, or are you going back to the Justice League cartoon show continuity for it in your mind?
I think, I don't think you would need to cut out the Justice League one. Because, it never told an origin story for him. He only had a couple.
I mean just stylistically.
I'd be good with that. I mean, he wasn't, it was loyal to the character. It had Skeeth in it, which was great. And I like that the idea that DC, as we often talk that we wish DC would connect up their movies, they did connect up their cartoons, which was great. The idea that, the Batman and the Batman show was the same one that was in Justice League. The Justice League then tied in with the Batman Beyond, etc. That it was a shared universe, and I think it strengthened it because of that.
Okay, Brett, your turn.
Well, I'm going to have to go with Booster Gold. I think he's a great character.
Brett, as usual, the laziest member of the group.
No, I'm kidding. I'm actually going to jump over into Marvel's side, and I'm going to go with the Spider-Man Fearful Symmetry Death of Kraven storyline. I think that if they could possibly do something right, and they did that right, then you would have an amazing, amazing animated movie.
You absolutely would. Absolutely. I think it'd be really tough for them to pull off, and I think it'd be very jarring because it is quite a dark series for people who are casual Spider-Man fans, but if they could pull that off, it'd be unbelievable. I don't know. Zek's art is so beautiful in that. I don't know how you match.
I'm not saying that they can right now, but the truth of the matter is that if they wanted to make a big giant splash and really come back into the animated world, then I think that would be a great storyline.
That would, yeah. It's the type of thing.
I love a motion comic.
Yeah, that'd be a start at least. Again, they're behind. They have not done as good a job, and you have to wonder why they have never done as good a job. they've tried. They tried with Ultimate Avengers and this and that. They've tried to put their mark out there, but they've just never been as good. You're right. If they did that right, that'd be as good as anything DC's ever done. I'm going to also stick with Marvel. I would like to see this next one as a 3D animated film instead of traditional that I think we're all more familiar with, because I think that would be the best way to tell the storyline. And that would be the Age of Apocalypse storyline. I think that that could be a spectacular, spectacular way also for Marvel to get out there. And especially if they did do a 3D animated, I think it would be different. Another reason why is because that was a great storyline that they told, in the mid to 1994, in that range, 1993.
So, 95 to 96.
Yeah. But it doesn't seem to me like that series gets enough praise. And I think if they were to do that and did a great job, also people would probably go back and read the trade paperbacks again, and it would also get a shot in the arm, and that would be another reason to do it. I think the Kraven's Last Hunt storyline absolutely gets its praise, but I don't think Age of Apocalypse gets enough. So, Keith, what do you want to say there?
Just two notes on Age of Apocalypse. The Wolverine and the X-Men cartoon that didn't last from a couple of years ago was starting to go that direction, it's my understanding that it would have been full on into Age of Apocalypse had it continued.
Oh, that would have been great.
The second season. There is an omnibus edition of Age of Apocalypse coming up in February or March that is 56 books, 56 comics in one omnibus.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite amazing. I every time I'm on Amazon, I look at it again. It's on my wish list on Amazon. I'm not sure if I can justify it, but it's pretty beautiful.
And you know what? 56 books would be a bitch to turn into a two-hour movie. But I still just think the concept is great. And someday we should talk about that one more, because if people were not reading or not familiar with how that came about and the shock that it was, the way they entered that series and everything, it was something terrific. So let's go back now, and I guess it's my turn if we're doing a snake format, and I have a lot of ones. I'm gonna say just a quick shout out here to Adventures of Alibi Jones, because I think that would be by our friend Mike Glama. It's an independent book that I think would make a great animated feature. And I also would like to see something like Darkest Blackest Night, I think would be interesting, you know. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting concepts out there. But I would go with Gotham by Gaslight. That would be my second choice. The first of Elseworlds book before it was Elseworlds. That just kind of started the concept. You know, Batman in the 1890s or somewhere in that late 19th century. Really, I think that would make just a spectacular animated feature. And, you know, I think would be right in line with what DC's done. Any thoughts on that, guys?
Well, I like that as a concept. Yeah, hitting some of the Elseworlds or an anthology kind of story.
All right. Again, anybody, any thoughts on Gotham by Gaslight as a series?
I'd like to see an Elseworlds anthology be cool. You know, hitting some Red Sun, for example. There was a couple of those early ones, Blue the Gray and the Bats, Cal, that I don't think they could support a whole big story, but, you know, 20 minutes.
Oh, you know, Gotham Knights was a really good
Gotham
anthology
by
story for Batman.
Do you think Gotham by Gaslight could support? I do think it could. One that I know could, it would be Justice League, The Nail and Another Nail.
You just took mine.
I'm sorry, Pastor.
Hate you guys.
You didn't even like The Nail and Another Nail. Your problem with it, I remember you reading it. Maybe you've come around since, but all those years ago when it first came out.
No, I was actually looking at this from an animated point of view. It struck me as it had a lot of characters that would be interesting animated in an Alan Davis style.
Yeah.
It's true. I really objected to the turn the Jimmy Olsen character takes in it. I didn't feel that was true to the character, so I don't particularly love the book. But I think in order to make it an animated movie, they'd have to add some material, and I think
if you put in the nail and another nail, I think you'd have enough there. You know what else, though? I mean, I remember you telling me you didn't like it. You said Batman gets these because there's these weapons, and Batman takes these weapons and starts using them at the end. You're like, Batman doesn't need weapons. Batman's Batman. He can just beat people up. Batman's using weapons. And I'm sitting there going to you, what the hell is a batarang? What do you mean he doesn't use weapons? And you were complaining that Batman was using these super-powered weapons. I'm like, what's the Batmobile? What's...
As I remember, I was talking about... I don't, unfortunately, remember the end all that well. But I believe he picked up some sort of super gun.
Yeah, it was like super, like an alien thing. Type thing.
That's
yeah.
What I objected to is Batman using a gun, whether it was a ray gun or something else.
You said weapons. That was your...
I didn't like
you're an idiot. Brett, it's your turn for your second film.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with a We Talk favorite from DC from a long time ago, and I'm going to go with Slash Marad.
Yeah,
because I think that it would make a nice, tasty movie. You know, I was thinking about it. I was seriously considering it, but both of them would make fine animated pictures, interesting stories, and I think would probably support the length. Now, at the other side of the coin, I definitely think that the Intrepids would make a fine animated movie. So,
nice point.
I just want to respond to that.
Oh, go ahead. Your last finish up is all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to comment on Slash Marad there for a second. Do you really think it would be made better as an animated film rather than a live action?
I think so, given some of the character design and stuff like that. It's almost one of those things that would be made like in a rock and roll kind of 80s animation style that I think would make it
You know what I think would make it best?
Give it that feel.
What I fear, actually. I feared that them getting that heavy metal rock and roll style to it. To me, it really calls out for a Mad Max live action thing.
Guys, you know what? You're missing the point, though. You know how this Slash Maraud would be at its best? Would be if you did an 80s-style V television show. 80s-style. Like V, but Slash Maraud. That would rule.
Yeah, I never saw any real-looking dinosaurs on V.
Yeah, I know.
Do you think we could get Robert Englund?
Yeah, I think you could, actually. I'm not sure who he'd play. Maybe a dinosaur nowadays. But, I'm sorry, we're hoping to interview him next year. as he's going to be at the Entertainment Expo next year. But nevertheless, I didn't mean it that way.
Year.
But all I'm saying is, Slash Maraud, like V, not like the new V, not like that piece of crap that came out, like V in the 80s, man. That. All right, let's go over here to Keith and throw in your next animated film.
Well, I know that you'll have four buyers for it the day it comes out, Power Man and Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah.
I think just visually it would really work. I'm not even thinking of a specific story or anything. But
Now I am. The storyline, the storyline where Kunlun, the city is being attacked by a dragon because of something Iron Fist did that destroyed the city, and they have to go back and visit the dragon world underneath the sea and uncover the mystery of what it was that he did that caused them to Chiang, the Dragon King's brother, to attack the world. Because then you have Iron Fist, a mad Iron Fist, taking on an 80-foot dragon. It's awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I really want that. Thinking Iron Fist with like an anime style, making the energy flowing off his hand. I think that'd be awesome.
Power Man with a yellow blouse? Yes.
Animated style.
Don't forget the metal headband. That's what he's doing.
That's right.
That's the best part.
In animated.
Oh no, wait. Don't forget the belt. don't forget the blue tights and the belt, the chain belt. That's the best part.
And another DC one I'll throw in is Books of Magic.
Oh yeah.
I think it'd be a great opportunity to just introduce to a broad audience
children's
accessible
Crusade.
Story.
How about the Children's Crusade, the Elseworlds annuals crossover event that they had
Vertigo Press. Vertigo.
Sorry. I said Elseworlds. Vertigo, yes. What about that? Would that make a good film?
Well, it wasn't a particularly great story.
You didn't think? I thought it was. I mean, hell, Game
of Thrones. I like the bookends of it with Gaiman and was it Bachelot? I want to say Bachelot, but I'm not sure that's who it was.
I can't recall.
I blanked. Oh no. Yeah, he did the book. Yeah, he did the two bookends. I don't think it really worked in the middle. I think only the bookends really work. And actually, I mean, the bookends of introduced the Dead Boy Detectives, which would make a good cartoon.
Yes. There are a whole bunch of storylines in the books of Magic which would animate well, but I don't think that would be one.
Okay, it was a 7-issue thing and written by Neil Gaiman and Alyssa Quitty. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right.
I think it's Quitney.
Quitney. And you're right. It talks about that boy, but you know what? It's not saying who was the Wikipedia. You've let me down once again. I think anytime you get seven, maybe not all seven are good, but I'm sure that four or five of them were. I remember enjoying the entire damn thing.
Apparently we're doing the four for a dollar box right now. Maybe. I've lost track of whose turn it is to talk about one.
And you're right, it was Chris's Bachelor. You're a hell of a memory.
Hey. We're back to me?
We're back to you.
I
believe we are, Chris.
Yay. I'm going with Future Imperfect. Or Hulk Future Imperfect.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a good one.
The Peter David, George Perez. I think it was a 2-issue prestige format limited series spinning really the last great arc of Peter David's run on the Hulk.
Well, you know what? It was a future imperfect. They tied it into some of the future storylines in the regular series. And I agree, it was awesome, and it would make a great thing, except for, please don't go with Perez's character design for the Hulk, where he looks exactly like Frankenstein. Always bugged me. I love Perez, but that bugged me.
I would just love to see Perez animated Rubble. No one draws Rubble like Perez.
Nobody does.
Man, the South Korean animators just send it back. No way. We're not doing this.
Any more, Chris?
Any more? There's always more. Keith mentioned the Steranko S.H.I.E.L.D., our Nick Fury agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. earlier in the podcast. I think that could animate great.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it would be. Actually, that would be awesome. Brett looks like he has one more. Brett, why don't you throw it last?
I was actually just going to say, I would. It's not an animated movie, but I would love to see an animated TV show, like more of an adult-based animated TV show made out of Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah, well, if we're going to do that, then I want one on Bone with partially animated and partially a 3D animated and partially human, because it's never going to see it. We're never going to see it as a movie.
And maybe a live-action 5-year series of Booster Gold.
Well, you know what we can hope we can start with is that freaking pilot you want. Ooh, actually, I'm just going to throw this out
just
really quickly. You have anybody, I want you to choose two people. This is very much improv here. Keith, you have two people, one person in history who's dead and one person currently who's a star alive, two people who can play Booster Gold. Who are your ideal casting?
Wow, that is really hard.
That's what she said.
You know, I'm inclined to go with like Chris Pine for current.
Okay.
All time, James Dean would have been awesome Booster Gold.
James Dean would have made a great Booster Gold. I'll go with that. All right, Chris Pine and James Dean, excellent. All right, guys, let's move on to our reviews next. Ayo, and we're back. Not that any of you would know it, but we took a little break from where we left off here in order to go down and read some books so we can review them. And in this time, in our break here, some major breaking news has happened. So we have a breaking news update with Cub Reporter K.
Big shakeup at the New 52. Rob Liefeld, as of number nines, will be taking over plotting of Grifter and Hawkman, and taking over plotting and drawing Deathstroke. The first arc of Deathstroke will reintroduce Lobo into the New 52 universe. Reactions? besides me canceling my subscription to Deathstroke, any other reactions? I'd like to point out that the trade paperback of Deathstroke will include issues 1-8.
So, I really look forward to seeing how big Lobo is going to be.
He will be gigantic. There will be many pouches, and he'll have very tiny feet.
Maybe Schumacher should make the next Batman film.
Chris is ready for the 90s.
All right. Keith made me promise not to look up the breaking news when he told me there was something we had to come to here. This is not what I expected. Now, I don't know, what was the popularity of that book? Why are they leaving? Is it a firing, or is it the creative person, people working on it decided to leave? What's happening? Is he still doing Hawk and Dove, writing that then too? And
that's the next part of the breaking news. We have two big things announced this week from the New 52. The other one is that DC is at the number eights, is canceling 6 books, and we'll be launching 6 new ones to replace them.
Oh, yeah.
Referred to as the second wave.
Yeah, that's great. Launch new ones because it's proven you can publish 52 quality books.
Well, I asked Mo and Brett not to look at this news story before we had it on the show. 6 books canceled. Take a couple of shots in the dark.
Well, Hawk
and Dove?
Yes.
I'll say Blackhawks.
Correct.
I'll say Frankenstein.
Nope.
Demon Knights?
Nope. Give one more incorrect one, and then we're and then it's Family Feud rules.
Suicide Squad?
No. So the list of canceled books is Hawk and Dove, Blackhawks, OMAC, Men of War, Mr. Terrific, and Static Shock.
Man, how did we not go for those ones right off the bat?
Except for Static Shock. That's the only one, yeah. Because I put the existence of OMAC out of my brain. I was trying to save it from...
I put the existence of Static Shock out of my brain.
Actually, Men of Valor, I completely forgot existed. Honestly. At least
and it's called Men of War.
Okay, I mean, that's no...
Yeah.
Okay, so what's replacing it? That's the bigger...
All right. Second wave...
James Robinson?
...will be... So this will be... they'll start in May. The April issues will be the final ones of the ones that are being canceled. We've got James Robinson writing Earth 2 with Nicholas Scott doing the art, which is a Justice Society book. Batman Incorporated by Grant Morrison.
Oh, no.
Wee.
I knew you'd be jazzed. We've got World's Finest, which is a very interesting one, by Paul Levitz, who hasn't been he hasn't been the Wunderkind, that's for sure, with revolving artists George Perez and Kevin Maguire. World's Finest will follow the Huntress and Power Girl as they are stranded on New Earth, the main Earth of New 52, and trying to find their way back to Earth 2, where they're from. We've got a book called Dial H, which is a new take on the old Dial H for Hero concept.
No.
And I don't know if any of you know the writer China Mayaville. Mayaville? There's getting a lot of buzz, but I actually don't know who it is. It's a novelist.
No,
we have The Ravagers, which is a spin-off from Teen Titans and Superboy, written by Howard Mackey.
I thought it was a spin-off of a book that from 2099 universe that Stan Lee wrote that sucked.
No, that was Ravage.
Oh, I'm That's sorry. Right. How could I make that mistake?
DC had a book called Superboy and the Ravers, I believe, at one point.
Yeah, and a lot of people are asking about that, and they are wondering if Ravagers is going to be some kind of update of Gen 13.
I actually believe that The Ravagers was also a Donald Hamilton, Matt Helm book.
All of these ties to things that will have nothing to do with it.
All these things I'd rather read than probably, no, Dial H for Hero, at least originally. In case anybody isn't aware, Dial H was these two characters, and it was like short story, backup stories as a general rule. The hook to this was that people could give them the powers. Like, you would write into the fan page and you would suggest the powers and characters, and for like five panels, this character would become this character that the fans had essentially created. So, I guess the idea that you can update that now with modern technology and Twitter and the internet and emails is intriguing, but, most of those heroes are really blue.
I can't imagine they're actually going to do that part of it.
Yeah, I can't.
Because Dial H had been around before, and it was around after without that part of it.
Yeah,
there was a 90s series that actually has quite a cult thing going on.
It was pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Now we got one last book here, G.I. Combat, which will replace Men of War, I assume. J.T. Krull will be writing the primary story.
Oh, and then there's a...
Although the backup stories are what appealed to me. Haunted Tank by John, I'm going to go with Arcudi.
Yeah.
Will switch back and will rotate with The Unknown Soldier by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti.
I love both me some Haunted Tank and some Unknown Soldier.
So I could do without the main story.
Those guys were... especially Unknown Soldier, wasn't it most recently a Vertigo? Actually, I believe both were most recently Vertigo.
It was,
problems.
Yeah. Yeah, and Unknown Soldier had a bit of a run. I mean, it was 30 issues or something. It wasn't a bad run.
Yeah.
So there we go. That is second wave of New 52.
Get back to this Liefeld crap. doesn't this speak perhaps of a nepotism between him and Jim Lee? The friendship, but there's nothing... quality of work since he's come back and worked for DC or his prior history. You'd think if anybody'd be sick of his crap, it would be Jim Lee who started Image with him, and watched this guy completely self-destruct. But, I mean, Jim Lee, of course, has a lot of power within DC, and here's Liefeld gaining more power, and considering he sucks ass, you have to wonder if there isn't a little bit of the, you know, friendship here.
He's got influence. He must have Boys Network.
He must have photos of Jim Lee at a party in the 90s or something. Because
I got those too, but it hasn't done me any good.
To take someone who
is
getting canceled at number 8 and to give him control of 3 books doesn't make the least bit of sense to me.
I just don't get it. I'm calling out Jim Lee on it, honestly.
Unless you want those 3 books to get canceled next.
That'd be my, that's my only thought is that, I mean, I guess it's the way that they thought they might save those 3 books, but it seems like the worst plan ever.
It certainly seems like it was a plan for the Robinson stuff and perhaps the World's Finest. I mean, these seem like concepts that probably have been in the works for a long time, but...
Well, the JS, we didn't know it was going to be called Earth 2, but we knew a JSA book on Earth 2 was coming. And we knew Batman Incorporated was coming. So those two weren't surprising at all. The World's Finest actually is kind of a neat idea. I mean, certainly there's been a lot of pressure on DC to add some female lead characters. This is
put 2 in one book, and that way you don't have to, you know. Hey, who
still
do you guys...
Still no female writer.
More importantly, who do you think that the Huntress and Power Girl are going to sleep with first?
Sorry, Chris. I believe that the writer of Dial H is a woman.
Oh. Okay.
Of course it is.
But I can't be 100% on that. I don't know.
I think the Ray showed us how sensitive they are right now towards having diversity within the universe. Did you hear my question?
No, I wasn't paying attention.
I said the big question is, who is the Huntress and Power Girl going to sleep with first?
Considering the universe, probably each other.
The Huntress and Batwoman. I'm in. I'm collecting again.
And the writer on... that writer's man. just leap in with the correction. Just someone will have tweeted me in the middle of... In between those 2 minutes. I know none of these books. Okay. We got King Rat, The Tane, City in the City, Kraken, Embassy Town. Yeah, do not know it.
Like I say, I just really think considering how Liefeld has ruined his reputation and really hurt the reputation of Image of the company as a whole to the point where Wildstorm had to break off in their own way, largely I think because of what Liefeld did, the idea that Jim Lee is now over there with this much power and like I say, I'm not sure of their relationship, but you have to think it's some sort of friendship. Why else would this guy be working at all? Like, I don't
know. I just don't understand why he's spending so much time on DC when he's trying to restart his own comic series.
Uh-huh.
He's got his money, own obviously, number one. And number two, if it's anything like the other series, let's say it's solicited for release tomorrow for 2 months from now, it'll be coming out in 2027.
But technically, at least he's only plotting them, and he was always better at plotting than he was at writing.
Oh, yeah, as plotting was only an F instead of an F-.
Well, I will enjoy my trade paperback of Deathstroke, issues 1 to 8.
Was Deathstroke not popular? Was it not well-received critically? Was it not?
Those are all kind of middle-level. Unfortunately, it's... It was one of my favorites out of the New 52, and no, I'm not going to give it a try. I've given Liefeld more than enough tries in my life. I'm done.
Oh, my God.
There will be no, oh, give him a chance.
You shouldn't judge it
until you read it.
Lobo.
I was just about to say, I've always loved me some Lobo. Lobo has gone from Giffen to Liefeld.
Yeah, Giffen and Grant, yep, when it was kind of funny, to... Now Liefeld, where I'm sure it will be not funny.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, no. This isn't a low point for Lobo. Wolverine kicked his ass. That was the low point.
Yeah.
No, I think it's fair to say that Lobo has had lower points, yeah.
I think this is a good low. I just, he's never done, I imagine maybe this isn't going to be a funny Lobo because Liefeld's never done that. Really. Wouldn't it, if there was somebody from you would love to see reboot reboot Lobo who was from Image and those original creators, it would be an Eric Larson. I think, God, he'd do a
Jay Lee. Ass.
Pardon me?
Jay Lee.
Jay Lee, number one, wasn't original Wildstorm or Image. Okay.
I gotta say, there has not been a single moment in my life that I liked Lobo.
No?
I never liked the character at all. I just thought he was a one-note. And I didn't care for the note.
That's why he was great. I agree he showed with up Mo, once though. A year. Oh, wow. This is
his series was too much.
A series was too much, and also being an entry into the demon at the same time, and 4,000 crossovers. Anyways, we're getting off on a tangent into another subject. The career
of Wolverine, but...
That has been breaking news.
Yeah. Thanks for ruining my night.
I need a sound effect for the breaking news.
Well, apparently at that rate it'll be wah, 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 wah.
I thought we saved those for when I tell a joke.
We were talking about what you called writing.
Hey, right. Hey-o. Well, like I say, the reason we took a little break was so after we had talked a few subjects last time, we're going to go and read some books and come back and talk about them. This is the We Talk Comics section known as the We Views. Yes, that's right. Brett came up with that name. Everyone?
Woo!
Land? Very little. And we're going to open up here with a book that we're going to open up because I know there's a little bit of perhaps, I'm hoping, spirited debate that's going to happen from this next one. And because I love that and I'm going to encourage it, we're going to come out strong here with there's somebody who has a book he particularly loves and somebody else who has a rebuttal. So we're going to open up with Lobster Johnson, number one. Chris, talk about this book.
Lobster Johnson, he only appears in three panels of the entire comic book, but it had a solid mystery to it. The art was clean. It reminded me a lot of Sandman Mystery Theater. I finished this book. I got right on Amazon, and I ordered the novel of Lobster Johnson. Then I went over to YouTube and started watching Spy Smasher, which is one of the inspirations of Lobster Johnson. That's how much I like this single issue. Can't wait till issue two.
I think you liked it even more than that. What was it you said? The best book you've read in how long?
In a couple months.
Okay, I thought it was even longer.
No, I used the word months.
Okay. Well, months. A couple months to me. Months to me is more than a couple. But that's all right. That's all right. No, you love the book. Anything else you want to say on it before we get the rebuttal?
No, not particularly. You're going to hate it. I know that.
No, it's not me. Brett.
Actually, no. You know, like, the truth of the matter is that I thought the book was good. It was nice. My biggest question was like, if that's the best book you've read in months, what kind of crap are you reading? Because I just didn't see that it was, I understand your love of the lobster, and I understand your love of the Mignola characters. I just didn't see that it was like, holy crap, that's an amazing book. It was a good book. And I look forward to reading the miniseries packaged together. But it was still, to me, so much of a setup that I just didn't necessarily understand the, like, why it fully made your best
To me, it felt like a departure of Lobster Johnson from the Hellboy universe. The difference in the art between Hellboy and Lobster Johnson, or this limited series for Lobster Johnson, felt like they were taking him totally out of the Hellboy universe, and they were going to do a straight film noir detective story.
I mean, I love film noir, so I mean, absolutely, I like the book a lot, and I do look forward to reading it as a whole. But you know, like I say, it's not my favorite book overall, but that's my thoughts.
I'll give my thoughts next here because I think it kind of ties in nicely to what Brett just said. For me, I thought it was, of the five books we're going to be talking about here today, it's my third favorite of the week. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the book, but if it's, I would put it on the same level as what I said about Fatal, which we talked about last week. Was like, yeah, I really like this book, but it's not. If somebody doesn't love it or doesn't feel compelled to read it, I wouldn't blame them. It's good, but it's not groundbreaking. Not didn't blow me away in any way. It's just a nice, solid mystery. Nice, like you say, clean art and a good story. So, I mean, if it's in the middle of the five, does that make it a Captain Average, or does that make it a Catwoman's Meow if it's up there with, you know, with Fatal? Probably Catwoman's Meow, but yeah, it didn't blow my ass away or anything. Keith, what do you think? Stop thinking about my ass being blown away first.
I really like the book. I'm not a big fan of the Hellboy universe, I gotta say. And I did like that. You know, one of the interesting things about when we check out these number ones is we do, because we're coming from this new 52 number ones thing that we did, I often approach them as, how much unpacking do I need to understand the story that I'm starting with, supposed to be a number one? And I actually forgot that it was part of the Hellboy universe. I just figure it was another character that Mignola created. I enjoyed that. And I thought it was humorous that Lobster Johnson's barely in it, and the little bits that he does turn up, it's just he's there and gone, and no one really pays that much attention to him having been there.
See, that's my favorite type of book, where the main character doesn't have to be there for his presence sort of to permeate the entire book.
And you know what? The guy who's probably going to be the main villain of this whole thing was only there for a moment as well. It's an interesting book. I really did enjoy it. All right, well, let's continue with the snake format here. And I guess, has everybody actually enjoyed that book? Which, there was a little bit of debate, but I'm not sensing the fist fight I was hoping for. So maybe we'll get that in one of these next ones. Keith, snake format, you get to go next. What do you want to talk about in the WeViews?
Let's go with Whispers. Now, this is a indie book. It is definitely not a superhero book. It was from Image, isn't it?
Image, yes.
Yep.
I've already forgotten. I was intrigued by this book. It had that old indie feel of, this is definitely not a superhero story. It's not a hero story at all. It's got a supernatural element, sort of. and I don't know. I'm intrigued where it's going to go. I miss the kind of books, you know, like Strangers in Paradise, and some of these books that, you know, told other types of stories rather than straight on superhero stories. So I'm going to keep going with this one.
All right. Well, I guess it's me next. And if we're doing the snake format here, I'm just going to quickly have to look up who this was, because I do want to give, it was written and drawn by one person, so I do want to give him the proper respect here, and as I am a complete unprofessional, I don't have it right beside me. Joshua Luna. I don't know his work before this. Do any of you?
I do not.
No? Anybody else?
Nope.
Not all familiar? Okay, well, this might have been, I mean, for all I can tell, this is his first work. It does appear. I thought that this art, number one, was spectacular. Now, don't get me wrong. I find that perhaps the characters are too perfect. That's one of the things I appreciated about Intrepids was the fact that you had a short guy and a fat guy and a kind of a big body type woman and a more voluptuous woman, and it was different body types. And even though it's an unrealistic style, they're more realistic people in some way. Whereas in this one, everybody looked like a gorgeous model, like you're more used to seeing. But as far as the actual rendering itself, absolutely amazing. In fact, it happens often to me. You talked about Strangers in Paradise, Walking Dead, Invincible. Every now and then you pick up that small press book and you read the first one. You go, man, that is awesome. And you know people are going to talk about it. And you know it's not going to come out of the box strong, but it's going to continue to be talked about and build momentum to the point where its reputation and sales and legacy is higher than what it really is. And that's what I felt when I read this book. I thought it was so absolutely fantastic. This was better than any book I read last year. Most likely be the best book I read this year. Something knocking it off. It's going to take a hell of a read. I love this. I loved it so much. It's your turn there, Brett.
Well, you know, I, like Keith, I was very intrigued with the story. I got to say that as I was reading it, I reached a certain point and I was just like, hey, you know, this is a really interesting story. I think one of the things that took me out of it was I really didn't think that the writing was very good on it. I thought that a lot of the dialogue just didn't work for me. And then besides the dialogue, what really I thought took me out was, unlike Mo, I hate the art. I think he looks like a junior right out of high school doing art for his first time, and he's about as pro as my cat.
What?
I'm going to call a slight amount of hyperbole in what Brett said.
Fair enough. He's about as pro as
you are. Your cat's work is good, I'm going to say. Your cat does okay work. The layouts aren't the best. Some of the anatomy could use some work, but I can't hold it
anymore. This book sucked donkey ball. It was horrible. The art, let's just talk about the fashion in this book. Normally, I don't comment on fashion, but I need to on this book. Everybody
now, wait one second. Book, should I, before we go forward, point out what you're currently wearing?
What? Wearing a Transformers t-shirt.
Yeah, a Hawaiian shirt.
And Hawaiian
shirt. And a 1930s style Sherlock Holmes hat, it looks like.
But
he's one of the Newsboy Legion. Leave him alone.
Let me make it. Wait, the Legion were cool.
Don't get me wrong. I've seen you wear worse.
Let me make my point here. These people all seem to shop at the same generic sweater vest store. There are no logos or anything. Everybody is properly groomed. They have their shirts tucked in. Even the girl Junkie. just awful. And as far as the art goes, these people all look like mannequins. Our main character walks around the entire thing just staring into space. There are so many shots of characters just sitting there, close up on the eyes, staring into space. I find myself looking at the backgrounds, trying to find something interesting, and there really wasn't. Everyone seemed to have the same brown picture on every wall in this book. It is ridiculous. We have a generic coffee house scene. We have the coffee house scene where a supposed fight sort of starts. But, I mean, it's like, what, you're going to make me leave? Yeah, I'm going to make you leave. I mean, the dialogue was just terrible.
Actually, Chris, I know you're never going to, but I have to correct you.
Shut up. Let me finish my point.
I have to correct you on something, Phil.
Shut the hell up.
No, because I'm going to correct you. And you can get back up. I have to correct you. Actually,
I let you talk all this great crap about this book. Shut up. I don't care. I don't care if I'm correct. It was just bad dialogue in there. It was basically like, it was like, what if the mannequins from the Gap ad performed the latest episode of the Ghost Whisperer?
Of the what?
Ghost Whisperer. It's a television show. Not good. Jennifer Love.
Okay, I don't know. Whatever. Anything else you have to say then? Go on.
No. I am done. Catwoman, yeah.
I do agree his character design sure needs a lot of work. And he probably can work in his background. But I still really appreciated the art. I have it happen to me sometimes too, Chris, where there's something that one or two things start to set me off, and then you start, early on in a story, you start reading it, and something sets you off, and then there's something else that sets you off, and then pretty soon things build up to the point where there's a lot of things you hate because you're looking for them now, and it starts to really get to you. I get the sense that that's what happened to you. And that's what happened to me, for instance, on Grant Morrison's Action Comics number one, or you know, where something bothered me so early on, and then something else, and now lots of little stuff started to bother me to the point where I just hated it. And I get the sense that I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that this
did
that for
you. You're wrong. The problem was the book sucked donkey balls.
Well, no, but that's it. I mean, this like one thing goes wrong, and it's up, and then now you find a lot of things that you can't, and you can pick up apart, no question. See, and whereas, like I say, I think it's I really enjoyed the characterizations. I thought it had a natural pace. I thought I liked the fact
that Molson
Molson
XL.
Pardon me?
I also like the Molson M crap.
I don't even know what he's talking about. You're speaking in tongues now, Chris. What are you talking about?
It's a flat beer Molson Canadian makes.
Do they still make it?
Wow.
Yeah, they do. But
it's obscure even for Canadians.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I do like that beer. It's not my favorite beer on the entire planet, though. There's a big difference between me going, that's pretty good, and me going, this is something I love. Like I said, I think this is tremendous. But I think that's great. I think that we have such diverse opinions on it because it means that we basically
this book's so bad it'll give you cancer.
See, I need Keith to actually read the book because I know that Mo is too far over on the one side and Chris is too far over on the other.
Well,
so
that's
I need
it.
Keith
we
to
got...
actually read the book to tell me if I would be interested in carrying on past.
I just read this.
Well, that's the thing. You got one person who's saying it's the worst thing ever, and another person saying it's the best thing.
No, I mean continue reading the
Chris
book.
Chris said he was going to... Hold on. Let me just say. You got one person who really, really hates it, one person who really, really loves it. Then you got, and it's funny because you got, I mean, this is what makes it interesting. It's like how Keith could not stand OMAC anymore, whereas Chris is like, this was the best book of all the 52s. It happens. And meanwhile, you got Keith who said pretty much that he would continue on with it, and Brett who was like, it wasn't that bad, but I can't continue on with it. So, I mean, we really do have, I guess it's a book that people need to try.
Dialogue and art.
Pardon me?
That's kind of a perfect range, actually.
That's the dialogue and art.
We don't often get this kind of range.
This is awesome. This is awesome. Okay, great. Great. Well,
I'm going to jump in here, Mo, with just background on Joshua Luna. He usually works with his brother, Jonathan, credited as the Luna Brothers. They got their break in Image when they did the miniseries Ultra. They did Girls. And they have also worked on Spider-Woman Origin with Brian Bendis.
Okay, cool.
That book, in my opinion, then, should be much better than it actually is.
Whereas, meanwhile, I can't think it could be any better, and somebody couldn't hate it more. That's really cool. Okay, great. Let's move on then. Again, snake format, so I guess it would be Chris's turn. What do you want to talk about next?
Wolverine 300. I kind of enjoyed this book. I have no problems with Jason Aaron whatsoever. I do have another little fashion critique here. There are certain characters that can pull off a jetpack. Sabretooth is not one of them.
Spoiler alert, something really weird happened that week.
Well, I'll be talking about it a little bit more when I get to it, so there's no sense in hiding it.
Yeah, really, it was sort of a nothing issue for me. It was enjoyable, but it was also a big landmark issue. And it has Sabretooth. It's in Wolverine. We should have a knockdown, drag-out fight for the entire thing. That's what the book is supposed to be. And with a big issue like that, that's what I wanted. And this was just a regular old issue. Kind of disappointing from that point of view.
And give an aside here, where something Chris pointed out that I was actually thinking, I wasn't going to bring this up, but this is the 300th issue, and it is an oversized book, I think 40 pages or something like that. But it used to be that it was a 300 or 250 or one of these milestone issues would be a double-sized book, all fresh content. Whereas in here, it's like, oh, we throw in a few sketches, we throw in a 10-page preview, another Wolverine book or whatever, and they fill it out with the content, so you actually are getting a lot for your buck as far as pages, but you're not actually getting, it's not like it used to be, where it used to be, you know, a 300 issue, 400 issue, or whatever, even issue 25, was double-sized and gave you extra. And
like the Fantastic Four 600 that came out that was know, 100 pages of new content.
Yeah. So, okay.
I'm just putting this at Captain Average. I wouldn't spend my money on it.
All right, Brett, your turn.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the book was really separated into chapters, and as the chapters went, as my interest went, so it would be like chapter one, I'm interested. Chapter two, I'm not interested anymore. Chapter three, interested. You know, I kept flipping back and forth, and by the end, I was so tired of being interested and not interested that I just decided that I wasn't very interested, and so I'm definitely going to give it Captain Average because I'm just so sick of the X-Men.
You know, Brett, didn't you feel that the chapters also came in at like a weird place? Like it was like
very
a chapter.
Weird, yeah.
There would be a chapter that would last three pages, then there'd be a chapter that would be at the start of a page and another chapter at the bottom of the page. Like it was really all over the place.
And then some that would be like eight pages, so yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really strange. I guess my turn next.
this You're not used to being in the middle.
No, I'm not. I'm not used to being in the middle, which is why I like it. Let me mix it up again, like I say. But this book reminds me of this is your equivalent of your summer action blockbuster, where you don't really need a great plot or you don't really need a great characterization because instead you can kind of have a slick storyline and slick action and explosions and it's entertaining, and that's what this was. So if you like Wolverine, if you're a fan of Wolverine, if you find the Wolverine's cool, you're going to really enjoy this book. If you don't think Wolverine's cool, well, he's just a dick, and that's just kind of the way the character comes across. I did have an issue with the art and the Kubert's art. I didn't like the way his faces looked. His style has changed over the years, and I don't like the way Wolverine walks around the entire book looking like he just smelled a fart. sorry, Keith. I saw you starting to laugh, and you're ruining to take me out of it here. But I'm just going to keep going. I was kind of enjoying it. I was like, it's all right. It's, you know, whatever. It's like I say, it's a blockbuster. Completely forgettable. And then you have the Wile E. Coyote moment. where Wolverine is on a motorbike I just can't believe this happened. Sabretooth decides to take him out by setting up like some wires or something like that across trees. So he rides into it and then he's hanging there on it. So then Sabretooth comes up to him and insults him some. Instead of, you know, while he's hurt, I don't know, killing him or something. I don't know, because they're enemies. Just like walks away from him. It gets on a backpack. He flies off. He's still talking. So he's been in the air maybe perhaps 10 seconds. And it appears he's flown off at least 200-300 feet. Like at least 10 seconds, 200-300 feet. And Wolverine jumps over the edge and lands on him. Wolverine, who as far as I know, does not have the powers of either Angel or Quicksilver, has caught this guy who's got 200 feet in 10 seconds. And again, I'm like, this is a summer blockbuster. If you're thinking you're looking for logic too much, you're not going to get it. But at this point, I'm just going, I got to burn this book. This is just too damn bad. All right, Keith, go on.
Well, now I may change my opinion. That was pretty compelling, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm feeling that this one's going on a birdcage line here. You know,
it was, wasn't it?
Well, when they actually, Superfeed actually says, "I wily coyote'd him" or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, they're really hiding it. That part was a bit goofy. I didn't. It kind of came out of nowhere.
Calling that part a bit goofy is like calling water a bit wet.
Well, what's strange is in the structure of the rest of the book, you could almost lift the Sabretooth stuff out. And the rest of the...
Which I think is part of Chris's problem. It should be all Sabretooth and him going head-to-head.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt. This is the reintroduction of Sabretooth, who's supposed to be dead. Yet again. Yeah, I was more intrigued by the rest of the story of, you know, possibly a new Silver Samurai, what's going on in Japan,
One thing I did like about this book is, now this is a book that we've been including some random issues of things, talking about the concept of someone's first comic book. And I hadn't been reading, none of us have been reading Wolverine. We jumped and we grabbed this number 300. I expected when someone suggested Wolverine 300 that traditionally you build a story arc that culminates in these big milestone issues.
Yeah.
So I expected that this was probably this would be part five of a storyline.
Like Witchblade.
And it would be incredibly hard to get into. Yeah, like the Witchblade that was actually like an epilogue to everything that came before and nothing happened.
Yeah, we're still waiting for something that actually ends the storyline.
So I actually expected this would be part five or part six or part four or something. And then I get it, and it's actually the start of the next thing that happens in Wolverine, not the end of the last thing. So I did actually like that. That there was a few bits that I wasn't sure where they were. Some of the relationships, why was he going to Japan, that kind of thing. But it seemed to be actually the start of something new, which is good timing with all the new things in the X-Men since Regenesis. I hadn't tried Wolverine yet. I'm not sure if I'm going to keep going. I don't know if I'm interested enough in what they're going to do with Silver Samurai, which is the next storyline. But I'd say... A little above average. It's definitely not a Catwoman's meow.
It'd
be higher if it wasn't. I would definitely go higher if it wasn't for the goofiness of the Sabretooth battle and that stuff didn't quite make sense.
All right, Keith, go ahead. You got the next book.
Well, let's do Wolverine Alpha and Omega, which is spinning off from the events of Wolverine and the X-Men number 3, which I am reading. This is Brian Wood's first work for Marvel, as he's branching out from the books he was doing at Vertigo, which ends soon. He's got some creator-owned work coming up. He's got some Marvel work. This is a 5-issue miniseries. I am curious what the guys who haven't been reading Wolverine and the X-Men have as far as whether this is really a good entry point. I'm not positive why this is a separate book, I'll be totally honest. I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting story. It leads logically out of what was going on in Wolverine the X-Men, but I have no idea why it's happening as a separate story and why they're going to continue the storyline that's in Wolverine the X-Men concurrent with this, because it seems like maybe a double-sized story. I'm not sure it's a 5-issue story. So I'm going to keep going with it because I do like Brian Wood. I'm still going to go with average, though, because it didn't wow me. And I kind of wanted to be wowed with Brian Wood's first out of the gate mainstream work.
It's really amazing to me that we all read the same books, and yet this week, more than in the past few weeks, we're seeing them so differently. Rashomon, is that the name of the movie?
that is the name of the movie.
Yeah. Go ahead.
There's some kind of meta level where we each have a different interpretation of the movie Rashomon, though.
Nice.
That's my philosophy bit for tonight.
That's your philosophy bit for tonight. My philosophy bit is that I've decided I want a woman like my car, clean on the outside but dirty on the inside. Now, what I'm going to say about this book is it's absolutely awful. It's horrible. There's so many issues with this book, and now I'm not as familiar with Brian Wood. I've read a little bit of Northlanders, really enjoyed it, but I'm just not as familiar as Keith and especially Brett. I know, besides Northlanders, what else did he do that really blew your ass away?
Channel Zero, DMZ, yep.
DMZ is one of my favorite books.
Yeah, and I've heard so much about this guy, and then I read this.
And I've read a lot of his Planet Lar stuff, so... Yeah.
I hear so much about this guy and people rave about him. Then I read this and I go, if people are liking this, again, it's because it's the in thing to do to like this book or like this. All right, let's just look at the dialogue. You want to talk about the dialogue in Whispers. The dialogue in this is far worse. The dialogue in this as a character saying things like, yo, and just really, really forced. There's no thought balloons. And yet there's no captions. So what you have is a character who's doing long-running, talking out loud to himself monologues for, like, you know, it'd be the equivalent of walking
it's
around talking
to exposition there, Mo.
Pardon me?
It's called exposition.
The point is that he's walking around for like 20 minutes, you know, just talking and talking and talking. If this was in real time, and it feels really unforced, really, really illogical. Bad characterization, bad dialogue, and at the end of this issue, I'm going, what was the point of this story? Forget about even fitting into the other Wolverine book. Just what's the point of it at all? There's no point to this. Nobody's likable, and also you have this female character in this alternate world. I don't want to give away too much what's going on, but they never tell me who she is, and I don't read Wolverine. I have no idea who it is walking around with them. It's just really, really poorly put together, and it makes me think it's like Woods needs some money. He has no, and they don't care about the quality they're putting out, and he doesn't because it's just Marvel characters. It's not his own thing, and so I'm just gonna shit this out my ass and get paid, and that's how it comes across to me. I really think that this is terrible, terrible, terrible book. This would line more than one birdcage.
I'm going next.
No, you're not. It's Brett.
Nope. Do we have to take turns?
Yeah.
I'd like to respond.
Well, you'll get your chance to respond. Wait your
turn. All right. Well, I'll be relatively brief in this. Now, like Mo said, I love Brian Wood. I think he's fantastic. And when I first saw what the book was about, I thought, you know, given some of his previous work, I actually thought that this was going to be an ideal book for Brian Wood, you know, young characters, which he typically does really well with. And then I read it and I struggled through the entire thing because I there's this half of me that's saying, you love Brian Wood, you must love this book. And there's this half of me that's saying, oh man, I don't love this book at all. And at the end of it, I'm just going to go back and read some good Brian Wood because this just doesn't win for me. So I really hate the X-Men right now.
So you're also saying it's going to Birdcage?
Yeah, I think I would. I don't care. I don't care where it's going.
Oh, it's not going anywhere. I'll give you that. I firmly believe that the events of this miniseries are going to take place between issues 3 and 4 of Wolverine and the X-Men and will have no repercussions anywhere. So I'll be honest with that part.
But if Brian Wood does make some money from this, then good on him.
Well, yeah, you can't blame a guy for making a living, but it's unfortunate that for someone like me who's you know, a chance to learn about this creator a little bit. It's unfortunate that this is where he came out. But you know what? I'll read some of the other stuff you guys have recommended. I'll get to it. Chris, your response.
Yeah, I actually thought this was a high-quality book. Unfortunately, I don't understand enough about the X-Men. I enjoyed it enough that I started going, you know, I really need an X-Men 101 to catch me up on what's going on in the titles, because I also have to admit, I had no idea who the female character was.
Chris, I'm reading Wolverine and X-Men. I didn't really know who that character was.
No, there's no such thing as an X-Men.
The guy with the mohawk who seems to be the villain of the piece, I had no idea who he was. Really, I thought, oh, okay, this is kind of good. I kind of enjoy this, but I want to know more before I give it a catch me out. Just Captain Average for
Does anybody, like, what was the name of that character again? Anybody?
That's Quentin. I know him from having read Schism, and he is a main character in Wolverine and the X-Men.
Okay. Does he talk like that? Does he use that? Is that the type of dialogue he uses in these other books as well?
Pretty much. He's very self-absorbed. He's being dragged around by Wolverine.
I'm not talking about the characterization. I'm talking the actual dialogue.
Yes. Yeah, he talks to himself a lot because he doesn't like anyone else, so he talks to himself.
And he uses things like yo.
You probably use yo.
But I know I use it in context of where it'd be funny. I don't actually use it. Nobody does. Like, there's, it just seems like nobody talks like this character. I mean, it just bugged me. I did not think this was good. But, oh well, that's interesting. So we got basically two people who didn't like it and two people who found it average. So it was very interesting. Okay, let's go, Brett, your turn to... Or no, Chris, your turn. No, wait, whose turn is it?
Okay.
Chris's
turn. To polish off the last
polish it off, that's right, with the Scarlet Spider.
Scarlet Spider, number one, yes. I don't have a lot to say about this book. I'm approaching it with a lot of cautious optimism. I like how they sort of brought Scarlet Spider back to the Marvel Universe. I like that they're moving him to Houston. In this book, we have a little bit of action successfully done. Everyone actually seems like they're acting like they're actually in Houston. It doesn't feel like a New Yorker writing Houston or, say, L.A. or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I like Yost as a writer. So, yeah, I'm going to get issue two. I'm going with a Catwoman Meow, but if issue two doesn't pan out, I'm probably going to drop it.
We may have to have five ratings instead of three. We're kind of adding these high average, low average. Is there a team with five members, and then we can rate them based on the five members?
The Fantastic Five. Okay.
This is a Power Man. That's no help.
Okay.
Condition Lavender.
Brett, your turn.
All right. Well, you know,
let's do that. Let's use the different colors. Yeah, the different colors they use for a terrorist alert.
Nice.
Isn't there five of those?
No, there's like eight of those.
All right, let's use eight of them. What the hell? We could do it.
Let's not get political.
No, I don't want that much thinking involved.
That's true.
I was told there would be no math.
Yeah. What I find interesting about this book, and actually thinking back to starting out with Lobster Johnson, is that perhaps I was wrong after reading all of these. Lobster Johnson may be the best comic book that I've read in months, because, you know, the Scarlet Spider didn't engage me very much. I found him to be like, have a little bit of, you know, venom in that, oh, I want to do bad things, but there's something holding me back. And so I must do good things, and you know, it just kind of annoyed me overall. And it wasn't a bad book. It just didn't, like, it's just not a book that I jump out and say, like, "Ooh, man, that's a good book. I want to collect that book." So, yeah, I mean, this is, for me, the exact definition of Captain Average.
Interesting. Again, it's just so all over the place. This is cool. I have a question for you guys now. As somebody who hasn't been reading the Spider Island or anything doing Spider-Man for quite a while now, for a few years, because I wasn't happy with what's going on, is Spider Island over?
Oh yeah, it's been over since November. It was only about 6 weeks.
It was very short overall.
Yeah.
And did you, all three of you, finish reading it?
Yeah.
No, not me.
How far in did you get, Brett?
I didn't even get past the prologue.
And this is where this character was reintroduced, though. So had you seen this Kane character reintroduced there?
You didn't know.
Hadn't seen him yet either. So you're kind of like me. You're kind of jumping onto it in that early spot. I thought this was a terrific book. I almost liked it as much as Whispers, but there was an issue I have with it that I'll get to. But first, let me tell you what I like about this. Here's a character. I was totally prepared to hate this. When Keith said we should read this, I said, but life's too short. You know, I was like, I don't want to read this. And even then, I almost didn't read it, even though I knew it was part of the reviews there. I was really against it because I know this character from the Clone Wars. And the Clone Wars was, Spider-Man Clone?
The Clone Saga.
Clone Saga, thank you. The Clone Saga and...
Saga? Really?
For me?
Not Saga. Sega?
Sega? I don't know. Sega. Sega. Anyways,
It's really Clone Sega.
the Clone Saga, whatever the hell you want to say. I knew him from there, and it was awful. Just terrible. And not only that storyline, but also the characterization of him. And I have, of course, read him since. So I was really dreading this. And I found this guy to be really, really relatable. I found his journey from not wanting to be a hero to being a hero and realizing he's not going to be able to, because the cover says all the power and none of the responsibility. Of course, take off and with great power comes great responsibility. But the idea that he can't ignore his responsibility even though he wants to, and that this is the character's story arc and we're getting it as it goes on, really was intriguing to me. I found him very relatable, found this really well paced, good dialogue, characterizations. I love the setting as well. I was just loving this. I really, like I say, almost liked it as much as Whispers. And then when I was finished with it, there was one thing that started to gnaw at me, and I was like, this feels awfully freaking familiar. Like, just, I'm like, where have I read this or heard this? And then I'm like, oh yeah, Will Smith, Hancock. This was Hancock done with this character. Like, I felt like it's the same thing. A slightly different plot, but as far as the characterization and style and some of the stuff that they're going for, you know, with this character who can't kind of ignore the fact that he has to be a hero even though he doesn't want to be, and he's drinking in a bar instead, and just, you know, all this type of stuff. I really felt like it was, like, it just reminded me of that movie so much. So that movie came first, and even though I think this was better, the fact that that movie came first, I have to knock it down a little bit because of that. Keith, your turn.
I haven't seen Hancock.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
So, I'm okay. I gotta say, next to Venom, which is awesome, this is probably the best Marvel book I've read in 10 years.
Oh my lord! What the hell am I gonna think? No, I love this book.
Yeah,
I love the layouts. Could you give him some FF, please?
FF is significantly better than this book, in my opinion. Wow.
Well, there's a two-page spread in this that is one of the coolest layouts I've seen in a long time. When they tell they could release that as, you know, your starter point, because it's, in five panels, the origin of Kane.
Hey, can I just jump in here, Keith? Because, you know, what was interesting was one of my problems I was having early in the book was I felt like I didn't know about Kane and get that backstory. And I'm so used to it coming right at the beginning. But it didn't. You're right. It came a little bit into the book, but they did give it to me. And I really appreciated that, and in a natural way.
Yeah, and with some really cool art style. The one negative thing I would say about the art style is there's too much Photoshop play for me. I know this has been turning up in a lot of books lately. It's easy to add those blur effects and such, and it kind of took away from the art because it kind of took me out of the style. I'm fine with comic art. You don't have to screw around with it for me. But I was intrigued by the character. I like that dynamic of, you know, unlike Ben Reilly, he's never had any illusions that he's the real Peter Parker. He knows he's a clone. He was told, you know, he's the middle child of the Clone Saga. And I don't know, I was very skeptical. I was extremely skeptical. And, you know, I was talking on Twitter about, you know, 2 months ago when it was first announced who it would be and what the title would be about. And Ryan Stegman, who's drawing it, was actually online and searching the name when the news came out, and said, "It's my best work ever. Give it a try." Just, and you know, respect him for, he didn't argue with me. He just said, "I feel like I'm doing the best work I've ever done." So, and I'm glad that I did look into it. I know I had to push Mo a bit to read this one. He was not into anything that smacked of the Clone Saga, and I hope that people try it out. I know it's gone to a second print, which is great, and yeah, I'm definitely on this book. It's going to sit next to Venom on the shelf if I take my books out of alphabetical order.
Which you won't. Hey, of course, Chris, you've seen Hancock. Brett, have you seen it?
No, I haven't, actually.
You haven't seen it?
No. Haven't seen it either.
Okay, that's interesting. It's too bad. No, I would have liked to have known if somebody else could make that comparison. So maybe somebody can email me or tell me on Twitter.
Hate Peter Berg. Despise him.
Really? I like him.
Yeah, me too. Big time. Chris, or Keith, has no opinion, as usual.
Yeah. Mind you, I really just like very bad things, so maybe it's after that that I don't care.
Could be.
That is.
All right. All right, so that was awesome. That went a little bit longer than we want, but hell, it was such good discussion. Thank you very much. Let's go out and go through, starting with Brett, through Keith, then Chris, then myself. We're going to do our last thoughts. Brett, why don't you go out with the last thoughts and tell us if there's anything else you've been reading, watching, or doing?
Nope. It's been a busy time getting back to work, so it's been really too busy almost even to read. I was lucky to read some of these books, so I'm happy for that. But otherwise, Brett_WeTalk for Twitter, and then Brett@WeTalkPodcast. Not much more to say right now. There'll be more soon.
Much more. Keith, your turn.
I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter. You can email me at keith@wetalkpodcast.com. And I've been reading some New Universe. I'm blogging about that on our website. And my second blog post is up. I'm suddenly realizing how much extra exposition there are in 1980s books. It's taking a little longer to get through than my DC books were taking. So a little slower read. And also 22 to 24 page stories, which is very different.
Can I say one thing? Your exposition, isn't it generally with thought balloons?
Yeah, there used to be a lot more thought balloons.
See, when it's thought balloons, it doesn't bug me. When it's dialogue talking out loud, it does.
Oh, they do that too.
Okay.
There's Peter David and Grunewald stuff. People just talk all the time, constantly explaining the plot to you. And usually what's happening in the panels.
Yeah, books.
George Perez came by it honestly.
We're lucky that modern books, as a general rule, have largely moved away from that. Definitely. Some things were better in the old days, but some things weren't.
It's enjoyable, but it's definitely a heftier read than the modern books. It's like reading everything. It's like reading Action Comics all the time, except it's good. And I'm also reading, catching up on some Walking Dead. I only started it fairly recently, so I'm only on volume 6 right now. So working through those.
Okay. I'm Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com. And I also have been working a heavy amount of overtime and reviving my zombie escape plan, just in case that happens in the new year. Every year I have to like sit down and make sure it's still good. But yeah, that's it for me.
All right. Well, everybody, first off, it's on Mo. _WeTalk, that's M-O-N-O-E, same thing, mo@wetalkpodcast.com if you want to email me. And we'd love to hear your opinion on things. As you may have noticed, we have a slightly different format that we've been trying out since the new year here, where we open with the news, then we hit a couple subjects, then we go to the reviews. If there's anything you'd like to see us review, or if there are any other subjects, or anything like that, or you'd like or don't like the pod or the new format, we invite you to do that. I'm guessing we have some new listeners because we are now officially on iTunes. And if you have not, if you are a new listener from iTunes or elsewhere, welcome. If you have been listening to us on Podomatic in the past, we feel free and subscribe to us on iTunes and tell your friends as well. We would love it if you would do that. This past week we have had up a special, as well as last week was our We Talkie Awards for the year. And then we had a special edition of The Red Ten. Tyler James and Cesar Feliciano were kind enough to join us. It was about almost a 50-minute interview with those guys. We really, really enjoyed talking to them. And you can find them on Twitter at Tyler James Comic and see at Cesar Feliciano, I believe it is. I hope I'm getting that right because his name's a little hard to pronounce and even harder to spell for me, I must admit. I'm somewhat illiterate. But we really want to thank them for the time. We hope you'll go back and check out that interview. And again, if you're new on iTunes, we have talked in the past to Mignola or Mignola. Am I saying it wrong now, Brett?
Mignola,
there we go.
You're doing fine.
We have had a little interview with him. Alan Burnett, of course, worked in DC, largely in the animated universe. Some really cool stuff there. Adrienne Barbeau, who, of course, the actress in Swamp Thing and a lot of other really cool projects. Neil Adams, Mira Furlan, and, of course, most recently here, Scott Kowalczyk in this episode. We hope to have some more stuff in the future. So check that out, too. I think you'll have a lot of fun with it. And I'm sorry if I've gone on too long here, but I just want to say as we go out for one last thing, I was born in Denmark, moved to Canada as a young age. We're here in Miami, and fortunate enough to meet my compatriots on this show. And there was a singer who passed away in Denmark I was a big fan of. and the boys are being kind enough to allow me to drop in a song by him to end, because he's passed away, and it happened a while back, and unfortunately, as I don't live there now, I did not hear the news at the time it happened, but I just wanted to play a tribute to Flemming Bamse Jørgensen. Bamse, I mean teddy bear in Denmark, and if you had seen him, you'd understand why. And a voice that would make you think there must be a greater power. And we're going to leave this show, drop in. I hope you all enjoy it. The a cappella version of the Beatles' Yesterday, haunting and beautiful version. I hope you all enjoy. Rest in peace, Bjorn. Bamse, you will be missed, and we are O-U-T.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Love is such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know, no. My baby wouldn't say. I said something's all wrong, now I long for yesterday. Love is such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. I believe in yesterday.